Welcome to Sewers and Shurikens. I'm your host and Dungeon Master, Wyatt Norman. SNS is a radical 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons podcast. We join our reptilian heroes in a magically altered New York, full of peril, ninjas, and pizza.
Turtles, roll call.
Okay, so we start off with your character, Emerson. You're in this alleyway. You've been chased a couple blocks from school. You know, you turn down this alleyway to hide from these kids that have been chasing you. So you're just kind of like waiting in this alleyway. There's a couple waste bins, a couple like doors to what you would assume is some pub or something in this seedy area.
Yeah, I think I'm just hunkered down. I'll probably have like a trash can lid in my hand held protectively just in case.
Yeah, you're like trying to hide yourself from view, and that's as you like hear some like footsteps and you're like, okay, they're about to pass, and they start to pass, and then one of them hears you kind of like you're muffled, like kind of whimper or whatever you're doing by the trash can. So they've now turned, like, see like three kids that got like dirt all over them. They've been chasing you all day since class was left out. You know, that's where they left school, chased you down here. They're now in this alleyway. You're looking behind you. You see no exit. You see these kids are coming at you, fists clenched. Think you can get away with messing with us?
You want to stay back or you'll be sorry. And I'm taking my backpack off.
Okay. And with that, they're like, oh, yeah, we'll be sorry, eh? It's 3 versus 1.
It's 3 versus 2. And I unzip the bag and go, get him, Rex.
Okay, and that's as your little robot dog kind of like stumbles out. You're still working on like the motor function of it. So it's like kind of, it's trying to like run at these kids. It kind of stalks forward a couple feet. And then like falls on itself. Like kind of like looks back at you sad. As sad as a robot could be. This is like, you know, pre-test run of it. So you weren't really sure what was going to happen. Left to no options. So they come up and they start laughing. You think that you can just get away with harassing us? And, you know, in your head, you're thinking that, you know, you've done nothing to these kids. This is unprompted. And they're just finding a reason to pick on you, really. And they kick Rex to the side. He lets out a little robotic whimper, which I can only imagine how that sounds. And they come up to you, and they are all going to try to hit you. Okay. So they all hit you with your little boy garbage shield armor. They hit you, and before you can even really, like, get your arms up properly, before you can do much beyond just, like, holding this shield in one hand, you just, like, start getting beaten. You're crying, you know.
I was trying to cry. I was like, the guy was always with Chris Farley, the skinny guy.
Oh, okay. I thought that was laughing. Okay.
Yeah, that was my attempt at a cry. It was like a nerdy cry.
A nerdy cry. Okay. Yeah, so you like kind of fade into unconsciousness after you take several hits. Rex is, you know, wherever he is, up against the wall. They leave him after kicking him a couple times. And you're not really sure how much time goes by before you kind of begin to wake up, and you look around and you can see there's like, you're in some sort of bed in this like very clean white room. Looks like there's a couple of like instruments on the tables. What you could only probably relate to as like a science room that would be in school for you.
I think my first instinct is to look around for Rex.
Okay, so yeah, you look around for Rex, and you can see he's like being put up on one of the counters, and there's like a screwdriver and like a couple of tools beside him. So somebody's like been tinkering on him. He looks in better shape than when he was getting kicked. And as you're like kind of looking there, this big burly man comes up from behind you. You didn't see him until he kind of like grabs your shoulder, not like in a mean way, but kind of, it's rough because he's such a big burly guy compared to this little kid. So he grabs you and say,
the boss will see you.
He goes to pick you up, and as he's like starting to pick you up by this one hand, he puts you back down after seeing you kind of like wince from the pain. And he just kind of starts walking over to the back door and goes through there, and you know, a couple seconds go by as you hear some like muttering, and this skinny kind of wiry man, he's got some like round glasses on his face, he comes out, and he, pretty tall guy, friendly, he has a lab coat on, you can kind of sense like a warmth about him, comes up to you and, hello, I saw you were harassed in the alley. I tried to get to you in time, but unfortunately, we can only get here so soon. Please, don't be scared. We're friends. This is Bruce. My name is Wilson. We are actual, let's just say, friends of people who build things like this. And he kind of points to Rax, and he's like, I'm very impressed with your ability to work with us these things. Is there more to it than that, or did you simply buy this?
I actually built it. It's something I've been working on for a while. We couldn't really afford a dog, so I started to make one. Am I in trouble?
Oh, no trouble, son. I mean, we don't often find people with talent like yourself. I only wish we could have got there sooner. But it is all right. You are here now. You're not in trouble. I'm surprised. How old did you say you were again?
I forget. How old was it? Oh, we said 8 or...
Yeah, however old you want to be. 8 could work, yeah.
I'm 8 years old. 8 years old, sir.
His eyes go wide and he's like, oh, wow. This really is an impressive feat then. You are welcome to stay, but do you have any home to go to? I mean, I wouldn't want to keep you from your parents. And he kind of like looks to Bruce and smiles when he says that. There's almost something behind that smile, but you can't quite make out what that was.
No, I was staying at the home. Oh, they're probably worried about me.
Throwing you on the spot a bit here.
I think we already figured he was living on his own, I thought. So, this works out.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought as well. He says, oh! His eyebrows are raised. He's kind of thinking to himself, well, that simply won't do. I think you'd be a lot more comfortable around someone more of your caliber. He points to, like, all the machines around. You can see, this is when you finally kind of fully take in the scene of all the buzzing and the whirring of these different tools and things he's built. You know, I'm something of an inventor myself.
Emerson's looking wide around the room, and then he points at one machine. He goes, is that a Sentra Fuji? Or she's struggling, like, Fuggy?
Like he's seen it before.
Yeah, he's like trying to say Sentra Fuge, but he doesn't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, and you recognize it as that. He's like, oh yeah, it's probably as close to that as you would have seen before. I mean, I've made some tweaks. We've been working on a couple projects that are a little off the rails at the moment. Just hoping to rein it back in. I was, you know, a fresh set of eyes like yourself. I think you could do very well under my teaching. What was your name again? And then he says, like, he looks to Bruce and he says, oh, Emerson, was it? Before you even answer, which is like really weird.
Yes, sir. It is.
He's like, oh, it was in your notebooks. You can see your books are like in your bag still, so whether he went through it or not is kind of unclear to you. Says, well, I sure hope you'll be comfortable here, and we'll just fade out to you kind of working with him. And fade back into a few years down the line. You've been working with tech for him for a long time. Like, you're his little prodigy, his apprentice. Like, you haven't really grown any closer to Bruce. He's just this kind of cold brute that just does whatever. He's clearly there for a paycheck. And Wilson seems like a pretty sweet guy. Always a little bit too curious at what you're doing. Like, he's always taking notes at everything. He's watching over your shoulder, getting your input on things. A little bit condescending at times, but he's as close to a father figure as you've ever really seen. And he's shown you a lot in the electronics. Kind of, he's fed you. He's had this little hovel kind of bed and an area for you. Allowed you to kind of like work on things, stay there for free. He's helped you with Rex. I mean, it couldn't really get any better than what it is right now. You've hit the lottery in probably the terms of Emerson's eyes here.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think this is like, he thinks he's in an anime now. He has a, I think on his notebook, it has this joking drawing. I got beat up by bullies and now I'm working for a Tony Stark.
Yeah, he's in an anime. Yeah. Sounds like a pretty nerdy kid. I got the vibe, yeah. He's in his comics right now. He's in his notepad doing his doodles. That's when Rex is like kinda on your lap. He's been working on and off, so you have him like turned on right now as you were fiddling with him earlier, so he's kinda like nudging you, but you still haven't worked on that commands enough to get a greater understanding of like figuring him out to work as you originally intended. But yeah, he's like kinda he's half working, I would say. So he's nudging you, and as he does this and you're kinda doing your little doodles, giggling to yourself, you know, thinking how great it is here. For probably the first time you've ever heard, Wilson gets kinda cold and he says, Emerson.
Yes sir, Mr. Wilson. What's up? So I see as I look up from my drawing of a circular device for use for later with playing with Rex for future self to know, because I have an option for my class.
Yeah. Okay. He says, I'm going to need you to stay in your room for a while. Take Rex. Play with him. I'll let you know when dinner is ready.
All right, sir. I can do that. And I salute.
You salute. He's like, very well. And as you're like kind of like turning away to go to the door to your room, the elevator dings and it opens up, and you see Bruce there, and he's got like a aquarium tank in his hands with a turtle in it. And as you're like kind of taking this in, Wilson's like, Emerson, now.
Oh, sorry, sir. And I head inside and I close the door, picking up Rex.
Okay, so you close the door, and a couple of minutes go by, and you can hear like a lock click from the other side, and dinner never comes. So you just kind of go to bed with an empty stomach, really. A couple of months pass. You can kind of get a feel for, like, he's been doing a lot of biotech lately and, like, working with some DNA of different animals, playing around with things. He's in that kind of gray area where you're like, this is really cool, but what are you doing? It's like, should I be worried? It's a little playing as God here. But you don't know exactly what he's been doing. He's kind of been keeping that for the later hours, but sometimes you'll kind of peek out at night, see he's like working on something or doing a dissection. You can see charts up on his screens and stuff that just display all this information on animals and the genetic codex.
I think I'm trying to not worry too much, because I mean, just as Emerson's father figure, he hasn't had a family in so long, he doesn't want to jeopardize this. But I think a part of him is subconsciously dealing with it by focusing on his little project and practicing with it in his room, bouncing it off the wall, catching it, the little prototype he's made, a little bit of round device that one might confer to being a shield prototype.
Right. And you kind of play back that the time he was like, you kind of a switch kind of hit up with him, flipped with him, where he's now like, he's been a lot colder lately. He's been doing his own inventions. He works with you occasionally, but it's not that same Wilson that you knew.
Yeah.
But he still is like a positive role model for you, and you've been kind of doing your own thing. So you haven't like fully been affected by it. It's just kind of, this is how it is. I'm still learning who this man is. I'm safe here, whatever.
Yeah, it makes sense. Emerson's not going to try to screw this up unless there's a sign. And there's not one coming, right, Wyatt?
There couldn't be. So, cue sign as you're in your bed one night, supposed to be asleep, but you know, you're under your blankets, tinkering, using Rex's like eye lights to work on this prototype. And you hear from the other side of the door, it's fine. He's asleep. We never let him out this late. We shouldn't have to worry about it much. A few more weeks. No, Bruce. We have to wait a few more weeks. As soon as a few more weeks go by, the boy should begin testing. I simply can't keep up with him. I don't want to keep this nice facade. I don't want to have to deal with his grimy little kid hands and his gross boogers. I mean, surely this will be quite the payout. I have to just keep telling myself that. Begin prepping him. But don't let him notice. We can't have it happen like it did last time. And, you know, you hear them kind of shuffle off. Bruce, shortly after, opens up the door, looks in. I assume you kind of, like, could hear him coming and went back.
Yeah. I feel like I'm pretending to be asleep. I'm holding Rex, like, trying to be as adorable as possible.
Yeah, so he doesn't... He kind of just grunts and heads back out the door. So, couple more days go by, you know, things have been getting weirder and weirder. Your diet's been changing. You've been eating like a lot of vegetables, fish. So it went from like you were eating with everyone else to they started feeding you with that. They started like having you do, like Wilson's been teaching you how to swim. He built like a little pool in your room that's like kind of made out of glass. So he's been teaching you how to swim kind of. But it almost doesn't feel like teaching. It almost feels like he's been testing you. And you relate that back onto this previous kind of thing that happened. And you're like, what is going on? Because he's writing down things and he's like, yes, yes. Oh, cup your hands. He's telling you all these things. So it just felt very odd to you. Up right into the point where you're actually grabbed by some men in the middle of the night. Doesn't seem like Wilson. Doesn't seem like Bruce. Just these like hooded men. How they got in, you're not sure. They've got these like kind of rat looking insignias on their cloaks that you can see. So they grab you, and as you're kind of like taking them in, you see the cloaks. You're trying to make out some facial features. You see the insignia. That's when they put like a blindfold over you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're brought into one of the lab's rooms that you're not really allowed to be in. And you can hear like bubbling and like something moving in like water, like a bunch of weird noises that seem kind of off to you. And you just get like this chill go up your spine. And that's when you're put on like this dissecting table, and they strap you in and they take off your bandana that's being used to cover your eyes, and they leave the room, and you're just kind of like looking. It's very cold in the room. You can see a couple of turtles in one tank. There's like these baby caimans in another. There's some eggs being like heated up in a incubator. So you can see like a lot of weird like animal type machines going off, and kind of this hum of all the electronics is startling. You know, you're not sure why you're here and why you're trapped here. And you probably originally thought there were some crooks, some people to break in. But after strapping you to the table, you're kind of like beginning to wonder what's going on.
I struggle and I try to wiggle. I think Emerson's nervous enough about all this that he would try to wiggle out. I think he was smart enough that he went limp when they did it, and is hoping the dad will help make it easier.
Okay, right. So, roll a strength check.
All right. That's a 12.
Okay, yeah. So you kind of get one hand out, and you begin working the other hand, trying to undo the strap, and you hear like a muffled
"Enough!"
And in walks Wilson, Bruce, as always, right by his side, and Wilson has like some sort of gas mask on, Bruce as well, and they have like their long lab coats. They've got like yellow gloves on both hands, and Bruce grabs you like firmly and puts your hand back in the strap. And then, you know, Wilson's opening one of the drawers in the back of the room, taking out this like little needle. It's full of like green liquid. And he goes over and he begins like trying to find a vein to put it in your arm. I mean, struggling's kind of not really an option at this point, as Bruce is now kept you down, but you can only kind of watch as he inserts this needle.
Well,
you
know, I think as Emerson's seeing this, he goes, "Oh no, wait, sir, I can do better. Dad, I can do better. Don't do this."
"You will do better. I'll be sure of it."
That's as he sticks the needle in and starts injecting you with like this green fluid, and you can kind of, you start to kind of feel woozy and out of body, and you're like, your muscles begin spasming, and you start to like shake uncontrollably. Roll a con save.
Okay. That is a 14.
A 14?
Yeah.
Okay. So you begin like feeling your skin stretch, and it almost feels like you're shedding your skin. It doesn't feel like you're tearing or ripping. You feel comfortably, like you just kind of, you start becoming this big creature, and you look down and you see you have like these green scaly hands. All your body's like, as you take this in, like you realize you have like almost a turtle-like body, and the straps have completely busted. You can feel like this power surge through you. You don't feel like a scared little kid in an alley anymore, and you don't feel like anything can stop you. You feel a strength within you, and you're able to kind of like get up off the table, essentially. Like there's nothing holding you down anymore. Bruce had to kind of stumble backwards as you begin transforming into this beast. And Wilson's like kind of just like,
yes, my son, look at what you've become.
As you're taking it all in, do you do anything?
You know, I think that he is going to, at this betrayal, he does the only thing that comes to mind as the geek he is. He is going to try to Hulk tear out of it. Like, do like the, he's like flexing his arms, trying to pull free.
Yeah, and that makes sense because you got this like new rage flowing through you as well. You're so conflicted emotionally. So you're going to Hulk flex? Is that your move?
Yeah, I'm trying to flex out.
Okay, just roll another standard strength save. Keep it easy.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a one.
Oh, okay, so...
on the dice.
This initial, like, surge of energy overwhelmed you, and so you go to, like, kind of flex out, and just kind of, like, you fall to the ground in exhaustion from that, like, very straining transformation, and very familiarly, you begin to black out again. So, you wake up, you find you're in, like, a cage. There's not really any creatures in the adjacent caves. There's nothing like that. All the other cages are empty. One of the, like, most of them are the same type of cage as yours. Yours has, like, a bit of water in the back, like a basking rock. Like, it feels like you're almost being mocked. Because, like, as much as you feel you have the mind of a turtle, you don't feel like you are a turtle. Sorry. As much as you feel like you have the body of a turtle, you don't feel like you are a turtle. So one of the tanks looks like it must have housed, like, the same kind of caimans that you saw before as well. And you're looking at all this, and you soon realize that, yeah, you're very alone in this cave. And with all the cages empty, it's very eerie. You're still kind of taking it all in, feeling very overwhelmed again.
Okay, so you mentioned there's a water thing to get water. There's bed. But otherwise, it's just a cave with empty cages.
Yeah, there's a couple like small bones in a couple of the cages, but not much else. So as you're looking at these cages closer, in like the back of the cave, there's like an archway that darkens after a few torches, and through it comes two basically pint-sized version of Bruce. Not in the sense of like looking like they're his sons, but definitely looking like similar build, similar kind of rough and tumble. They're like kind of punching each other on each other's arms, like laughing. Hey, look, he's up. And they come through the cave, and they've got like this slab of meat. You can't tell if it's what type of meat it is, really. It looks like it's a little old. And they bring, hey, dinner time. Start sliding it through the basically cell that they've put you in. You don't know who these people are. You haven't seen them before, but you do feel like you don't have a lot of options here when they give you this food. They kind of just like laugh and later, loser. They kind of start heading out.
Okay, so I think that Emerson steps down and examines the meat, and a question about the meat. How greasy is the meat?
Probably the greasiest meat you've ever seen. With how old it is, it's just like, it's greasy. As greasy as you'd want this meat to be, times three.
Okay, so here's me going off the rails. Is there anything did he come in just like a slab of meat, or was it on a plate? Is there any way I could store the grease? Because I think Emerson has gears turning in his head.
I'll say it came on as a, like a little tray. Not a plate, but it's like a plastic tray.
Okay. So here is my crazy scheme. Emerson is going to eat the meat, and he's going to squeeze the meat as he's eating it to get as much grease on the tray.
To grease his throat.
Oh, no, 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 no. This is even better.
Okay.
Because does the door have like a, is it a standard lock or is it electronic lock?
It's a pretty standard lock.
Okay, because here is what I think that Emerson's crazy plan is. He's gonna gather all this grease, and then he's gonna pour some of it into the lock and around the edge to try to help him jimmy the lock.
Oh, okay, yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, both to gum. I guess maybe make it looser and try to see if, like, maybe he can pull it from the other side, that kind of thing. He's basically using the grease.
You've greased it, and it's loose. You've got a loosey, greasy girl right on your hands here.
I mean, I came up with this because that is one of the spells I picked later on.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think he's going to try to grease the lock, and then he's going to try to jury-rig it. Because he's a smart kid. He's been dealing with tools. I think he holds up his claws, and he's looking at his claws, and he's figuring, all right, this is the best lock pick I'm going to get in this situation.
Okay. Roll sleight of hand.
All right. Oh, that reminds me. I wanted to throw something to you, Wyatt. I want to justify this. I think my background is going to be Outlander, considering where he ends up.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Because I think that's justifiable, because he is technically out. He is in exile.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, nice. That's a 17.
Okay. 17. Yeah, you're able to get the lock open. It comes off in, like, pieces. Like you're not just, a dumb kid. You're not just a basic thief. You didn't just pick the lock. You just found out where all the lock comes together, and you picked it apart piece by piece with your little claw.
Nice.
So, you're able to open up the door, and you can see either there's the archway that they came from, or there's, like, a smaller little... you almost have to crawl down this little hole in the edge of the room.
Okay, yeah, then I'm going to crawl through the hole, because wherever it goes can't be worse off than here. At this point, I think Emerson is going back to this instinct that I'm not safe here, I'm not safe around this bully.
Yeah, you're back to realizing I'm still very alone. So you begin crawling through that hole, and as you do, you're like kind of partway through the hole. It's pretty dark, but you're feeling your way around. You hear, like, far off behind you, like, "Hey, boss says we gotta get that plate back. Come here, little scoundrel." And at this point, you're already through the tunnel when they finish saying that. And you pop out, and you realize that you're in this, like, big cavern. You see there's, like, this waterfall coming down on the edge of it. So it's like this kind of cavern that near the back just kind of drops off as the waterfall runs over it. You can't really see where the waterfall starts. It just kind of starts. Like, it's not like, oh, the waterfall's coming from above or something. It just is there. It's very odd to look at. Beautiful, but it's odd. So yeah, as you're taking this in, you hear, like, kind of a bunch of, like, footsteps, more than those two that were there before, come into the room behind you where you used to be. And shouting, and they're, "Hey, where? I don't know where he could have went. We gave him a freaking plate." And you hear Wilson, "Yes, well, a plate is all he needs. This is why he's dangerous. Get him." And you can, yeah. And they,
And I still have the plate. I took the plate with me, definitely. It's the only weapon I have.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. So you take the plate. You've already taken the plate. You got the plate. You're good. It's nice and degreased. That you've used the grease, but yeah, it's like still a little greasy. Extra grease for you later. And you can hear, like, some of them have, like, run back off. Wilson's just kind of, like, barking orders at them, like, telling them, you know, you go that way, you go that way, and some have started coming through the tunnel.
Yeah, I want to do something clever with the plate, now that I think about it. I think he is going to toss, as you see, here's that, he's just going to toss the plate down so it bounces off of thing to try to splatter as much of the grease that he has in the path to slow them down. He's basically home aloneing this shit.
Okay, yeah. With your one item, you've now broken through a cell and then also greased a hole. Be in there, brother. So you wait, and those two kind of thug guys come through the hole. And, you know, as clumsy as they are, they just slip right on this grease, and they're just kind of, they're spinning in grease, like a hog in mud, basically. And hey, wait a sec, found him, hey, Mr. Wilson, sir. You hear one of them's hollering through the hole, and the other one's getting up, and he's sizing you up. He says, "Hey, kid, I mean, we don't want no trouble, but, me and my brother, we would love to have some trouble." Like, he's kind of like, pulls out, like, this kind of mace, which is a very unusual, not like spray mace, but like a handheld weapon mace, which is unusual considering you're in the city, but, you know, it's got some dried blood on it, so he clearly knows how to use it. And he starts kind of walking towards you. And his brother, done talking to Wilson through the hole, comes beside him. And he pulls what looks like a flail. So they're both, like, walking towards you. As you're, like, you have your back to the waterfall right now. So there's not really anywhere to go. That is until the rock beside the hole, like the rock wall, kind of slides open the secret passageway. And you see several more guards come through. These thugs with those insignias that you saw before. And Wilson. And he says, "Let's be reasonable, son." You see his breaths are kind of labored. You see him cough up a little blood. "We don't want to deal with any trouble here. We can make your stay nice. Just like old days." You can see right through his lying. It's very clear he's struggling to even come up with some lie to coerce you here. As you kind of begin to back up as they're trying to close in on you here.
"At this point, sir, I don't even think those kids were even supposed to be in that school. For all I know, this is all... He's just struggling. He's like, he looks like angry for a moment, like he wants to punch Wilson in the face, and he just gets sad and goes, "That's the first time you've ever called me son."
Okay. You say that, and you know, you're turtle tear.
And then
And that's when he says, "Get him!" And they start running at you. What do you do? This cold father figure.
You said I can't see where the waterfall begins, but can I see where it ends?
No, actually. You can see it goes pretty deep. You can, like, hear some water, but you can't see. It gets pretty dark.
I think I'm just going to look at my father figure, flip him double guns, and run and dive for the waterfall.
Flip him double guns. Okay.
Yeah, double middle fingers.
Okay.
And just run and dive. I don't have resources to fight these guys, and I don't... The longer I'm here, the more likely I am going to... I feel like he feels like that tug to try to get Wilson's approval, and he's tired. Not to make it downer, but I think at this point, he's willing to take his chances with the darkness. It's time to meet darkness, my old friend.
Okay. So you double gun him, you jump into this waterfall, and you fall for what seems like a fairly long time. And just as, like, you kind of feel like you're about to splash into water, instead you just, like, feel like you just go through something very cold, and you feel yourself kind of, like, fade into this, like, blank field, like, of just pure whiteness. And you see, like, these different objects flying past you. You see, like, this large book with some, like, writing you can't decipher on it. You see what you know is, like, a dragon fly past your head and just disappear into the whiteness behind you. All these weird things begun happening. Like, really, it's like your comics are coming alive. There's a bunch of these characters that you've seen before in your comics, like, running at you, and just going through you almost as they're, like, ghosts. And you begin to, like, kind of fade out. And as you start kind of blinking to adjust your eyes, you see that you're now in, like, this big green field. And around you are, like, these grand mountaintops and forest. And everything just feels very calm and peaceful here. But you don't feel like you went that far. Although you are very far away. You can tell.
I think I pat my chest to see if I'm astral projecting like in my favorite comic, Nurse Unusual.
And you're very much not astral projecting. But you do see, like, something fading in behind you. And as you turn to look at it, you see that it's actually Rex. So Rex, for whatever reason or ability, was able to burst free of Wilson when he saw you jump down, and he ran after you. So yeah, he's now here with you, kind of in this heap, clearly damaged from this, like, fall that he's endured to get to you, but couldn't see his master in distress.
I think he picks up Rex very carefully, cradling him, and just smiles and nuzzles him, goes, "Good boy, you're a good dog."
Okay. And that's...
I'm going to do right by... Oh, sorry.
And that's when we will fade out yet again. and we will flash forward a week of you being in this new land. You've realized it to be like one of those games you've seen, like the nerdy kids. And by nerdy kids, I don't mean you're not nerdy. I mean, these are just nerdy kids that had friends at school.
Yeah.
They would play games with these little, like, characters and fight dragons and all sorts of stuff. It feels very much like that world. You've kind of, like, watched from afar because you're very out of your element and in a new body even. So you see, like, people go by. You've seen, like, elves, all sorts of weird creatures. There's some animals that don't seem quite like they're from the world you know. So you've probably came to the conclusion that you're definitely not where you used to be. You're in another world for sure. Almost as if you've jumped into a comic book, which is probably a pretty exciting prospect. But you've also realized it to be a dangerous world. Fairly dangerous to the point of, like, you know, you're alone here. You don't know who you can trust. You're trying to think, okay, how do I get back? Although the little bit of wrecks that you have and whatever kind of you've probably found and salvaged around, whether it be a wagon wheel here and a bit of old metal from some tools or whatever that you've salvaged from an old barn or whatever. You've kind of have like a couple of pieces of things. Ever the collector.
Yeah, I feel like I've gathered, my first thing is I gathered a wagon wheel and I started working on it and forging a shield. And then Emerson gets a little creative and decides that, all right, I got a shield. I think he's thinking back on his inventions and he makes his first invention in this new world without actually having like technology, because I think he works with what he can find out. He asks around and he gets this rubber coating around the shield so he can toss it and have it come back to him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that works.
My first inventor's essential tool, the ricocheting weapon.
Okay. So you've tried it at this like cave you've been staying at. After, you know, some townsfolk found you in the old barn, you had to move to this cave. You've only found like one or two people that have been that friendly. But only because they're kind of odd looking themselves. Like a small kind of green figure with like tusks and stuff you talked to for a while. He was quite friendly. Everyone else is kind of just was scared. So you're kind of away in this cave. You worked on this shield. But you've quickly like realized as you've like tried to fix wrecks here and there, none of your like usual inventions and like electricity, none of the batteries or generators or anything like that that you typically work on. Not only can you not find anything like that, none of it seems to be working that you can kind of like try to piece together.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that bugs him after a while, because it seems like at least some thermodynamic theory should still be working in this world if fire still burns, people still get electrocuted.
Yeah.
By magic.
Yeah, you're still trying to pondering that, pretty frustrated. You actually begin hearing like this angelic singing, almost to as like an answer to your prayers. You hear this angelic singing that you feel pulled to. And it seems like it's coming down by the river where you've gotten like your water from. An otherwise pretty unremarkable area. But sure enough, you know, you hear this like melodic singing.
Yeah, I think after clipping his shield on his arm, Emerson is going to head down to where he's hearing this noise.
Okay. So you've worked your way down like a couple of the boulders outside the cave, and it's not really that far off from where you are, but you're able to kind of work to one of the bushes near the edge of the field, which encompasses the river coming through it. And you see, actually roll insight to see if you know what this would be in regards to like your comic book or whatever knowledge that you have.
All right. That's another 14.
Okay. You can tell it's like a creature of the forest. You can see it's got like kind of green skin, very beautiful, like elven almost features. Leaves are kind of like falling off of its like leaf cloak that it's wearing, just gliding through the water, above the water, around the grass that's there. And roll perception.
Okay. That's a 7.
Okay. So you can see something is like flying, something or some things are flying around her head as well. But you can't make out what they are from the distance you're at and from how small they seem to be. But you see she begins to like kneel down in the grass, wave her hands back and forth over the grass. And this like kind of magical aura, this like you can feel it. It's like energy emits from her hands and kind of like almost like a pollen that's visible to the eye kind of falls down from her hands and rests on the ground. She stands up and kind of gets back to her singing, does a little twirl, and just kind of poofs away. She's gone. And all you see, like, the dead branches that were there begin to, like, grow out of the ground as, like, new saplings. You see, like, flowers sprout from the ground. Old rotting fruit that would have been from an old tree comes up as a fruit tree. You see what was before, like the bones of animals that were below kind of start to, like, grow up to be these, like, beautiful, enriched, like, plants and stuff. These bushes and whatnot. Everything seems, like, kind of, like, oversized, though. Like, this energy really just, like, steroid into it. And you can see, like, these big, like, mushrooms that you couldn't really tell whether they'd be edible or not. They look big and blue, pop up beside all these things, and they're like soaking in all the energy that's left in the air.
You know, I think I'm going to pick up some of these plants, and, well, this is me improvising, but I think Emerson's going to take a bite out of some of it and eat some of it just to see if there's any texture difference.
Okay, so actually roll a con save.
All right.
Because as soon as you start going down to the plants, the mushrooms that are, like, full of the energy now puff out these spores that just kind of shoot into the air, and they start kind of surrounding you.
Okay, that is a 10.
Okay, a 10. Yeah, so, like, you begin to, like, try to hold your breath, but you kind of, like, look down and you're startled because you can see, like, little mushroom growths off of your arms where it's now landed that wasn't covered by your shirt or whatever you were wearing. So you can see a little growth. So that kind of makes you, like, kind of gasp and breathe some of it in. You feel like a wave of energy kind of rush through you.
Whoa, 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 whoa! I think Emerson is, as he's looking at his hand, he's like, keeps flipping his hands up and down, up and down, up and down.
Yeah.
Looking at the mushroom growth and just, like, has Home Alone, the Home Alone panicked face.
Yeah, like you poke the mushrooms and it feels just like your skin. Like it's connected to you fully now. And you feel like a, like, kind of a movement in your backpack that you have.
I think I'm gingerly going to try to take off the backpack without tearing any of the mushrooms off and accidentally, like, starting to bleed out.
Okay, so you take the backpack off. And right away, it, like, kind of bursts open with Rex. And Rex seems to be in the best shape you've ever seen him. Any little, like, dents or damages that were previously there are replaced by, like, little tiny little, like, mushroom growths. There's a bunch that's just, like, kind of, like, fused his back together that was dented in from the fall. So he's got, like, a bunch of mushroom clusters on him. And he's, like... He's exactly as you envisioned him. He's hopping up and down, like, just kind of his little electronic, like, metal tongue is just kind of, like, flickering back and forth, giving you a lick. Like, he seems very happy. Rexcellent, even.
I just want you to know, I immediately tried to Google, and apparently people have Googled mushroom dogs enough that it's the first thing that popped up with just mush.
Oh, okay. That's funny. Yeah, so you have this new, your canine companion is now, like, fully operational. So you kind of head back to your cave, do some tricks with him, play around with him. And as you're doing that, like, you can feel the energy still coursing its way through your body. So you begin to, like, play with it a little bit. You can feel all that energy needs to go somewhere.
Yeah, I think I start messing around with it, and then I start finding I can mutate myself slightly with it, and I just get, like, I can, all of a sudden I got razor sharp claws. They're okay. Weird because they're glistening with acid because I've learned how to channel my primal magic to sharpen my teeth. Or
they're glistening in grease.
Oh no, it's acid. It's I figured out primal savagery, one of my cantrips.
Okay, so you're doing this, and time goes on as you learn how to use these things. So like you've been living here for years now. You're in your early to mid range teenage years at this point. You're playing around with this magic. Somehow Rex, who's who was originally like prototyped to be a little puppy. He's actually grown up a little bit with you as like his mushroom growth has like enhanced his abilities and whatnot. He's like a normal sized dog, not necessarily a large dog, but yeah, like a medium to small dog. So he's even gotten bigger than originally intended. And you've learned to harness these powers and these magical energies that you have within you. You've learned how to work with them to alter these different mechanical inventions that you have. You've turned your cave into like a nice little home. I mean, it's got like a little mushroom bed, a mushroom table, a mushroom everything. It's mushroom. There's a mushroom door. So like basically mushroom. There's not much room for improvement. And you're going about your usual day one day, and you can hear like a bunch of loud like talking. It sounds like it's probably within the same distance as that field was, hootering and hollering. You hear like people seem to be drinking and dancing. You hear like the crackling of a fire.
I think I'm going to lightly sneak out of my, try to add some camouflage to my face by just taking some of my mushrooms that have been discarded and just, I'm doing like the ramble under the eyes by smearing.
Yeah.
Just smearing the mushroom paste under the eyes before I start to head out carefully, because I don't want to get into too much trouble.
Okay. I want to say Rex has like completely hollowed out a mushroom that's slightly bigger than him. So he's just under a mushroom. You know, like kind of Looney Tunes style where he just stops every couple of feet.
Yes.
And he just looks like a mushroom. Okay, so he's following you. And as you get closer, you can see what appears to be like some bandits in like kind of thug garb. They've got a caravan with them, a fire set up. There's probably about like 10 or so that you can see. A couple sleeping bags and tents. They're all chatting, eating, having a good time. Not necessarily hostile, but you do see some weapons at most of their sides. But yeah, you're able to get closer if you want, but you're not too far to stealth up there if you want. Otherwise, they're going to see you.
All right, I can do that, yeah. Yeah, I can try to stealth up.
Okay, so roll stealth.
That's a 4!
Ooh. So as like you want to stealth up, but you feel like this magical force within you, like kind of pull you, like you need to protect this clearing. You feel like a connection to the earth now. And that kind of like makes you second guess where you're stepping, and you crunch some leaves and they turn to you. So you can attempt to dive behind that bush, or you can attempt to talk to them now.
I think I'm going to try to talk to them.
Okay.
Oh, but I think in a hand behind my back, I'm also readying one of my gadgets. And it's just this strange mushroom-looking metal device. It's a purple mushroom cap with a white skull face on it.
Oh, okay.
And I push in the stem, which primes my airburst mine.
Okay.
So
you set that up. It's only been one guy that's seen you so far.
Yeah, I'm just... Oh, I know, but just I want to be prepared, because if one thing, Emerson, he has usable magic, but he wants to be prepared if you need to be to go, oh, I'm an almighty wizard. I must be high level, because his plan is if this goes bad, he's going to toss it and use it to cast Shatter, which is a much higher spell level than anything he has.
Okay. So
he's basically planning ahead to bluff.
Yeah, okay, so you have this, like, ready to go. And he goes, like, he kind of walks over to you. He doesn't seem freaked out or anything, more just curious, but he does have his hand at his weapon, and he goes, "What are you, orc?" And he pulls out his weapon as he says that. Seems to be a little more frightened.
I think Emerson is just like, "Oh, sir, what kind of orc wears a shell? What is this, East Denver?"
You just call him an idiot. Fuck. So he's like, "Oh, okay, what are you then? I mean, we're on important king's business."
"I'm a turtle, sir. I'm offended. How can you not tell? What else would have a shell?"
He goes, "Hey, man, I've seen some weird shit in here. I'm not from around here, let's just say." And with that, you can kind of see, like, yeah, his clothes are more like thug, but they're definitely from home. So one of his companions is like, hey, man, get back over here. Like, we're about to play some bones. If you want in on this one. And he's like, hey, one second. We got a turtle over here, bro. A turtle. Yeah, like one of those ones we're supposed to go get. And they're like, oh, shit, a turtle? And you see they all start to kind of like get up and start heading over.
I want to throw something out there, Wyatt.
Okay.
I feel like Emerson squints and he looks at the one he's talking to and he's like, wait, Albert? Fuck!
Roll deception.
Okay, because I feel like it's like, I want to throw it out there that maybe he thinks this is one of the one of the people with Bruce he's seen before. Deception. That's a 16.
Okay. Let me see if he's smart or dumb. Oh, he's almost as dumb as they get. He goes, Linguini! Man, I didn't recognize you. I didn't realize they were doing the transformations yet. Dude, that's good on you. How the hell did you get way out here? Did Wilson want you to come over? Like,
oh, yeah. He sent me to back you up on those turtles. Like, he wants us to take care of that dirty little brat, Emerson.
Oh, Emerson? Yeah, I heard he died. We're not too worried about Emerson. There's a couple of new guys, though. You might enjoy getting a look at them. They're kind of freaky things. No offense. But yeah, the bosses want us to go grab them. I guess they fresh arrivals, you might say. Yeah, but hey, I mean, good to see you, man. Maybe you want to come along?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
And then I think, like, I gotta roll on this to see if Emerson does both and try something to sneak okay, here. Okay, he will roll.
Fade out, and you fade us back in. Emerson grabs it, pulls it back.
Okay, he doesn't have bravado, so no, he's gonna disarm the air burst instead of like going, oh, it's I was thinking his instinct was if he was caught to cry out, oh wait, is that Emerson over there? And a point and then in sleight of hand pull the grenade and throw it into the camp. But that might be going too far.
That's horrible. Okay. So yeah, you go and sit down beside the fire. They're all welcoming you. I mean, Linguini wasn't a close friend, but they all knew him as part of the guard before he was brought into the special program. So yeah, they all get some good talking to you. And we'll leave it at that before you head out to get those nasty little turtles.
All right.
Hey, everybody. It's Sewer Sensei Wyatt here. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode of Sewers and Shurikens. Quick shout out to our tech wizard, Ralph. If you enjoy our content, we have a subreddit over at r/sewerclub, and you can find us on Twitter at sewersensei or email us at sewershurikens, that's no and, @gmail.com, as we'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.